Hey everyone, welcome back to The Digital Dive, a conversation about tech. My name is Jacqueline, and I'm one of your co-hosts.
And my name is Darsh, I am your other co-host. This week we discuss Android 12, the M1 iMac and iPad Pro, new Google Pixel 6 leaks, and of course, lossless audio quality on Apple Music.
Roll the intro. Darsh. Google I.O., obviously a virtual event this year, but so many new announcements, especially cosmetic announcements for Android 12. What do you think about this new Material U redesign?
I love it. I don't know what exactly it was about it that drew me in. I feel like it's just, it looks so refreshing. I haven't gotten to play with it. I did watch The Verge's video on it when it came out, and I just thought it looked really, really cool. And the way that it's, I feel like it's just becoming a lot more simplistic. Android, I feel, has always had this misconception that it's a really hard operating system to use, and I feel like Google's really been pushing to make Android less and less consumer daunting for consumers.
Yeah.
It literally just seems like that. It seems that Android is now going towards more of a direction of bright colors, very minimal, but also very unique design choices, which I kind of like. What about you? What are your thoughts on the Material U redesign?
Dude, I love it. Super, super cool that it's like customized to you. So Material U is spelled like U.
Yeah, Y-O-U.
And that's because the operating system kind of adjusts based on what your background is, if you want to set it up that way. So like if I do a picture of like a bright blue sky, then the elements in the operating system, like the control center, et cetera, will be bright blue to match. It uses color signs to create an aesthetic palette, which I think is really, really cool. And obviously you can change that if you don't like it, but I think it just like adds this element of friendliness to the design. And also, as you said, a lot of people think that Android is like more clunky, and like with the customization, you lose out on the uniform look. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of true. Like, we don't know how Material U is going to transfer to devices like Samsung devices or other operating systems that use a skin. But I think that they did a really good job with this one to solidify the design and have it be cohesive, at least on Pixel devices, while still having the customizability.
Oh, 100%. And I think one of the cool things too that they ended up doing was they ended up adding like everything is now bigger for some reason. Like, I don't know why they did it, but I like it because everything's a little bit more in your face. So like in your lock screen, whenever you don't have any notifications, you have a huge clock on there. And as Jacqueline just mentioned, right, it's fully based off of your lock screen. So whatever color palette it tends to choose, it just looks really aesthetic. And it fits really nicely. But then not only just that, they also have just bigger buttons on everything, like within your control center or quick toggles. You're pretty much getting huge buttons now, and you're getting all new widgets. And apparently the entire way the widgets have now changed in terms of how they work and how they function, which I think is really, really cool.
Yeah, and the widgets also were redesigned. So like the weather widget looks different. The clock widget looks different. They're more cohesive. Like they look like they're all part of the same thing, but they're also a little more playful. Like the clock widget, the edges aren't like perfectly round. It just has like a much more playful aesthetic to it, which I think is really, really nice. Mm-hmm. And then you have other like features built into Android 12 that are new, like this TV control feature. One of my biggest pet peeves, and I'm sure it's universal, is like having to manually type something in when you're on a TV and using a clicker to do it, like a remote. Mm-hmm. So annoying. So you can actually use a keyboard on your phone to type in the password for the TV or to look up a show, which makes it just a lot more convenient. And then you can also use it to pause or go through the different applications and things like that. So it's kind of just having your phone be the centerpiece of your TV. And then that also transfer over to being the centerpiece of your car with this new car lock feature. So like your phone can be your car key, and it uses NFC to kind of like securely do this, which I thought was also really interesting. But Darsh, it kind of brought me back to that conversation that we had with Jaehyun Jung on the podcast. It was like, what happens if your phone dies? Like, what's the plan B here? Mm-hmm. I feel like if our phone becomes like the centerpiece of all these different things, we're screwed if the phone dies. Like, there needs to be a backup. And I'm not sure if they're considering one, but it seems like there's not enough focus on that possibility.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, like, I feel like because this is becoming so much more of a mainstream thing. So now Apple has it implemented with an Apple Wallet, Samsung has it, and select Pixel devices will also have it. Also, there's not only just NFC, there's also UWB if this phone actually ends up supporting it. So BMW is the first set of car manufacturers that I've actually seen try to implement this. And from what it seems like it works pretty well. I mean, I think it's very conscious. Yes, you have to like make sure you don't have your phone dead. I personally just think that you should have some type of backup, and I don't know exactly what they're going to do. I feel like that's going to be varying by manufacturer to manufacturer, like potentially a card key, the same way Tesla has for the Model 3 and the Model Y for guests or for, I believe, just as a main key. I feel like something like that is going to be implemented very shortly as well, because they need to have some type of redundancy or else it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
It's a very good point though, because we honestly don't know what kind of future this kind of holds, because this is a really good idea in theory, but we don't know necessarily how well it's going to hold up in practicality and actual use.
For sure. And then the other thing that we don't know yet is app tracking. So obviously Apple has caused a major shift in the industry with iOS 14.5 and the Ask apps not to track. Google obviously has trackable advertisement because that's one of their biggest business models with obviously YouTube and Google Ads, etc. And there's not any news right now on if they're updating their app tracking transparency feature or if they're going to like kind of do what Apple did. So time will tell. I kind of feel like Apple put them in a spot where they have to do it because if people really care about this in the way that we kind of think that they do and Apple thinks that they do, then a lot of people I could see end up buying an iPhone because they think that it's more private in like the coming years if Google does not implement like the same feature.
Oh, exactly. And I think that's actually a really good point too. Like Apple kind of set this in stone for the rest of the industry. Because Apple's doing it now, they can't be the only one. And in any oligopoly type situation like this, where it's Apple owning one operating system and Google owning the other, and there's literally the only two operating systems running on any phone right now, pretty much. They pretty much just have to follow one another. And you see that pretty clearly when it comes to a lot of features. Like another feature that was added that was on iOS was the privacy features for the camera, mic, and location, where it shows up in the top corner telling you whether or not your camera, mic, or location is currently being used. And now you even have the option in apps like your weather app to have it in approximate location versus a precise location. You can choose between approximate or precise.
I love that feature. That's really cool.
It's a really, really good feature. I noticed it when it came to iOS and I was like, this is a great feature. Like I actually really, really appreciate this. And seeing it on Android now is honestly just really, really cool as well.
And the other thing that I think is really interesting is their investment in computational photography and improving that. I know that a common issue that is brought up by people with darker skin tones is that the camera never properly exposes their skin tone and the background. Like it either underexposes their skin tone and properly exposes the background, or like properly exposes their skin tone and then overexposes the background. And this is like, they've created a committee of people to kind of more accurately get this, which I think is a big step in like just equality and even like simple things that we don't even notice. Like we rely a lot on computational photography and AI now for things. So it's important that the AI is exposed to like pictures and information from every single ethnic group. And it's cool that they're focusing a lot on that and making the photos a little bit more accurate.
Oh, 100%. Like, it's really, really good to see. And I honestly really commend Google too when it just comes to everything they've been doing as of late. They even did address the app tracking. They said they haven't actually been able to, they haven't implemented it yet within the software, but Google as a company, because the ads are a huge part of their business model, they're looking for a way to make privacy a larger and more focused role within Android. They want to make it even better than it is.
Interesting.
So they want to do that, but they haven't announced any like real genuine updates for that yet, but they did mention that they are working on it and it is an active concern to them that they want to work and help rectify.
Yeah, we'll see.
So it's really cool to see them acknowledging it too. Like they're saying they want to fix it and they want to be better with it. So I'm honestly really stoked for it. And I hope that everyone listening is too. I honestly genuinely was considering picking up a Pixel. Like I kind of want a Pixel now just because looking at Android 12, it's beautiful.
Dude, I'm surprised that we haven't seen a lot of other creators like make an Android 12 hands-on video yet. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we've been seeing a lot of iMac and iPad videos since those embargoes just lifted. So maybe we'll see more Android 12 videos. I'm going to definitely install it on my Pixel. Google I.O. as a whole is just such a fun event because Google is really a company that focuses on a lot of different areas. And it's really exciting to watch all the different areas that they kind of are venturing into, whether it be like smart tech or the fact that they want to be like carbon neutral by 2030. All these other things that they're just doing. Since they're such like a giant company, they have the money and the ability to try a lot of different ventures. So Google I.O. is just an event that's filled with stuff beyond just the Pixel. Like, what were some other things that you saw at this event that they announced that you were like, wow, that's really cool?
Okay, so the big one for me was actually Google and Samsung. So they announced a joint partnership and joint venture. They're going to be merging Wear OS and Tizen. Samsung Tizen has been the platform that runs all of the Galaxy Wear devices. And I think this is really interesting just because I've used, I think, 3 or 4 iterations of the Galaxy Wear, and I've also used a couple of iterations of Wear OS. And I think this is going to be really, really cool because Samsung got a lot of things right that Google couldn't. And Google got a lot of things right that Samsung couldn't. And the fact that they're bringing them together has me very excited. But only just for that, I don't know if they announced it in the event itself, but I know Tizen is actually iOS compatible and it's like fairly compatible at that as well. So it would be really interesting to see how a Google and Samsung combined platform could serve on a smartwatch with an iOS device, because genuinely a lot of Wear OS devices look a lot nicer than the Apple Watch, in my opinion. That's still my opinion. It's been my opinion for a very long time.
Yeah, dude, it is crazy to see them partner and Fitbit's also involved. It's crazy because I feel like sometimes Samsung and Google are at odds. Samsung on their devices makes literally duplicate applications to Google's to have you use Samsung applications like Samsung Health and Samsung Home and things like that, because they're trying to build their own ecosystem. It's interesting to see that they would collaborate on this, but I think it's better for the consumer.
Yeah, I think it's definitely better for the consumer. I mean, in some regard, it's also not, but that's just because of diversity. Like Samsung was one of the only other, if I'm not mistaken, they were the only other smartwatch competitor to Wear OS and to Apple Watch OS, because there's not not many other companies that I can think of off the top of my head that have enough market share or enough enticing like product differentiation to have me want to consider it.
That's valid too.
So I think the fact that Samsung and Google are merging their platforms, like it helps people because if you have an Android device, it's ultimately going to be the best way to go. But at the same time, I feel like it also takes away from the potential to grow in that field. Like Fitbit just got bought out too, right?
Yep.
So Fitbit is involved with this as well. So literally Fitbit was another smartwatch platform that could have been used, which is just honestly, it's really interesting, but I leave that to you, everyone, the listeners. What are your thoughts on the entirety behind Android 12, Google I/O, and above all else, Samsung and Google working together? Do you feel like we need more differentiation in the market when it comes to smartwatches and smart devices? Or do you think that honestly, just having one, two, or three is all we need? Love to hear from you guys. Tweet us at Digital Dive Pod. But Jacqueline already mentioned this, and I want to kind of go deep dive into it. iMac M1 and iPad M1 has been all over my YouTube subscription box for the past 2 days. Jacqueline, what are your thoughts?
Dude, yeah. First of all, absolutely bummed that neither of us got review units for this.
Apple, if you're listening.
I know, Apple, come on. But so we can't like give our take, but I feel like I've kind of lived vicariously through all these videos. So I kind of thought it'd be interesting for us to just give our take on the actual reviews that we've seen. And I'll start us off with the iPad M1. Marquez's video was the first one that I watched today. And I was absolutely just blown away. Like the intro for this video is literally incredible. The whole MKBHD team is really, really talented. And I've gotten to know a lot of them personally. And they're also just like good people. So it's incredible to see them all like work collaboratively and make such an incredible piece. So that was a great start to the video. And then the actual video focused a lot on performance and the display, which are the main two changes with iPad. So the 12.9 inch iPad, as we've mentioned in earlier episodes of the podcast, has a mini LED display. And this display basically gets brighter and there's better contrast. And it's just an overall better display when you're outside. And then the performance wise, the numbers are bonkers. Like he did a lot of benchmarks and stuff. It's crazy. I think it got a million on one of the scores. And last year it had gotten like around 600,000 or something like that. So there was a huge performance increase in only like a year of time. And then Marquez's ultimate point in the video is like, I would love to see a world in which we can actually utilize this power because it's so powerful. It's as powerful as a MacBook Air and it's more powerful than like the 16 inch MacBook Pro in some ways, but there's no way to really harness that power in an effective way. Like I would still take a 16 inch MacBook Pro any day over an iPad Pro.
Well, that's also not even just because of the form factor, but rather the operating system.
The software.
Yeah. When it comes to the iPad and the iPad lineup as a whole, not even just the Pro, but the iPad lineup as a whole, they're very, very powerful devices. Whether or not you see the power that they actually do hold or not, like I can't force you. I highly recommend if you haven't already, pick up an iPad and just try using it for anything creative or just anything in general, like anything you'd use your computer for. But the one thing that does end up holding it back and holding it back quite a lot is iPadOS. And it's just super limited. Like you don't have access to as much as you'd like when it comes to like trying to do real computer-based work. Like, yo, the new keyboard, insane. I love it. I love the white design. I think it looks awesome. Honestly, bonkers. But above all else, even though I have a keyboard now, what am I supposed to do with that?
Even with the keyboard, it's not as good as a actual keyboard. Like it's not nearly as good on a lap. And the weight distribution is very different. Like it's top heavy. Mm-hmm. So it feels different and it's harder to type on in the same way as a laptop. So even if the software was like perfect, the form factor is still not like as good as a laptop for laptop type things.
Oh, 100%. And that's why like the M1 iPad, I think is going to be a really, really cool device for a lot of people. I think this is genuinely going to hit a lot of people and be very, very useful. But I still think that that market is very niche. Even myself, like I'm looking at this and I'm a huge iPad user. Like I use my iPad literally every day. Honestly, I wouldn't upgrade it unless I wanted the screen. And I don't really care for the screen. But if I wanted the screen, I would upgrade. But other than that, there's no other reason to upgrade because as much as the processor is there, you're limited by the OS that you're running. So you don't actually get to fully use the iPad for all of its processing power. If I'm going to spend $1,000 on a tablet that's running M1, I'd much rather put that money into speccing out a Mac Mini. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I actually bought the iPad Pro and it's coming in like a week, but I bought it for watching like Netflix, watching YouTube videos, reading. I'm not actually planning on using it really for anything creative except for honestly, like some animation work for the videos where I can like handwrite stuff, but nothing like editing related.
Exactly. And like, that's honestly still what I think the iPad is for. I think the iPad is for very basic tasks. Like I would still, I think I was telling Jacqueline this a couple of weeks ago. I would personally sell my MacBook Pro right now. I would buy a Mac Mini. I would spec it out. And then I would use the remaining money I got from my laptop and probably put a little bit extra money in. And I would get the nice keyboard from Apple for my iPad. And I would use that pretty much as a daily, like easy computing machine. Then I'd use my like desktop every time I actually needed to get genuine proper work done in like a faster workflow. But if I don't need a faster workflow, then I literally just use my iPad. It's just, it's not there yet. And I don't know. It's just not where I would personally do it. But the iPad Pro 2021 is insane when it comes to the screen, which I think is a huge factor for those people who are into graphics, who do need that kind of screen, who do need those updates.
I guess time will tell if at WWDC, new functionality is unlocked.
Really hope so.
Yeah, and it seems like there's definitely the shift in the operating systems becoming more and more similar, like macOS and iPadOS, and maybe eventually we'll see a merge one day, who knows? Obviously, Apple doesn't want to kill their laptop lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of desktops, laptops, etc., the M1 iMac embargo lifted the day before the iPad one. Again, the video is really focused a lot on design, because that's the main change, obviously, and then performance as well. And Darsh, you and I have already talked a lot about design, but did any of your thoughts about it change when you actually saw it like in someone's studio and in the background and things like that?
Yeah, my opinion on it changed a decent bit. Like I was under the impression, and I thought that the iMac 24 inch would be a great option for people trying to get into creative space. And I feel like I've changed my opinion on that quite a bit. It's nothing related to anything other than the fact that it's the M1. I started realizing when they put the M1 in the iPad, initially when I was thinking about the iMac 24 inch, I was like, I'm gonna buy this. This looks sick. Like, I love this. I may not like the bezels, but I do like the computer and I think it looks dope. And I would love to pick it up and use it as a main computing machine for everything. And I'm just thinking about it. And I'm like, honestly, like, it's really overpriced for what it is.
Ooh, hot take.
For $1,000, I can get an M1 iPad Pro. Odds are that iPad Pro is going to have very similar power to the iMac. As much as maybe I can't edit on it, everything else I'd want to do, I could do on it.
I feel like it's such a different use case though.
It's a different use case, yes. I just mean in the sense like in terms of power, I feel like it's not the best value for what it's offering.
Yeah, but I almost feel like, I mean, the M1 is so powerful though.
It's very powerful, but it's still limited. Like the iMac 24 inch, it's great, but by the time you get it to a spec level where it's going to be like very, very powerful to do everything you need, I don't know if necessarily it's the most cost effective.
I think I generally disagree with your point about the iPad Pro, just in my opinion, because I feel like even if the iPad Pro was like four times as powerful, it still can't do like anything that the iMac can do generally for like a desktop use case.
Yeah.
But I am aligned with you on the fact that like the baseline model one doesn't even come with the ports that you really need to use it as like a computer. I mean, obviously you can use it as a computer, but it doesn't have a lot of the ports that you would expect. So you definitely need to spec it up to get the ports. But I feel like the spec'd up model is like a pretty decent value proposition because M1 is so powerful. The screen is really, really good. Like you're going to be hard pressed to find a computer with that power and that screen for that price. Yeah, the Mac Mini has an M1 also, but then to buy an additional screen that is that quality, it'd be tough, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing, I don't necessarily think that this is like the computer for creatives at all, actually, but I almost feel like it's like the computer for the family.
Yeah.
Like you'd put this in your living room.
No, yeah. Like that I 100% agree with. It's literally just my biggest gripe with it is literally just the price. Like I just think it's overpriced for what it is, but that's just me. My point about the iPad, I kind of went off a little bit there in a weird way. I didn't mean like I meant more so in the sense that like in terms of how much I'm paying for, like if an iPad's $1,000 and this is like $1,300, an iPad seems more versatile to me, like me personally.
Yeah.
Just because I would use it more than I would use the iMac. But the iMac 24 inch is honestly, it reminds me of the MacBook Air. It's like the same way that the MacBook Pro had an equivalent, like the iMac 27 inch, like mid spec or like a low spec even. I feel like the M1 iMac 24 inch is pretty much the MacBook Air, but for desktop.
Interesting. Okay, so just for a quick comparison here, if you bought the 13-inch MacBook Pro, and we'll get like into the specs and stuff to create this comparison, 8-core CPU and an 8-core GPU, 256 gigabytes of storage, and 8 gigabytes of RAM, that would be $1,300. By comparison, if you bought the baseline $1,300 iMac, you would get 256 gigabytes of storage and 8 gigabytes of RAM and an M1. So that's pretty similar. They're actually like the same. If you went to the top tier M1 MacBook Pro 13-inch, it's $1,500 and you get 8 gigabytes of RAM and 512 gigabytes of storage. And for the iMac, if you go up to the top tier one, it's $1,700 and you get 512 gigabytes of storage, 8 gigabytes of RAM. It's a little more expensive on that front, definitely. It's not amazing. Like when you think about $1,700 only getting half a terabyte of storage, that's kind of rough, and only getting 8 gigabytes of RAM, I think that's not great.
That's the thing, right? Like it's like the MacBook Pro, for example, I think is the 13-inch specifically. I would equate it kind of more so with this in terms of how the power is going to turn out with this in the M1 iMac. But I think you're right though with what you were saying earlier, like this is the computer for families. It's the computer that you want to keep in the house for the kids to use when they're doing schoolwork or when you need to get some work done and like you really need to get some work done. It's one of those computers that can literally do everything. It has its hand in all the cookie jars, every single type, but it's a jack of all trades and a master of a few.
Yeah, I mean, so if you upgrade the memory, for example, to 16 gigabytes and the storage to a terabyte, it's around $2,000, which I don't think is terrible, honestly. I think that that's a better value prop than the other one, because at $2,000, you're getting a pretty powerful machine, great display, and I think it's going to last you for a while because the M1 is like super powerful and well optimized. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think that when people buy Macs, they buy them for the value prop necessarily in terms of like price. They buy them for the experience and the optimization and the software. Now, because it has M1, it's going to be even better. Like Apple's going to have even more control over optimization and applications and things like that. So I feel like if you are a family and you have like young kids, or if you are like an office and you want a general computer for the front desk or something, this is now a really solid option.
Oh, 100%.
I don't think it's like the best value option, but it's really good at like what it's for. Also, I know the white bezels have been a little controversial, but I think that Marquez said in his video, and I actually kind of agreed with it, Apple kind of wants us to blend into like a living room environment. And a lot of people's living rooms have white walls. So having the bezels be white kind of blends in a little bit more than they were black, but I definitely would still prefer black.
100%. I'm fully aligned on that one too. I feel like someone like Dbrand's going to come out with like bezel stickers.
Yeah.
I'm being so serious. Like I 100% think they're going to come out with bezel stickers. Like literally just going to be black stickers. The same way they came out with black plates for the PS5. I understand where the idea comes from. Like if you put up against a white wall or if it's just generally sitting in like a very well lit space, like you probably want to have like a white bezel. Like it doesn't look as bad. If I used it in person or like in a real situation where I had it in front of me, I'd be fine. It's just like one of those things. It's just like, it's a little unusual.
Yeah. And dude, I hate the white bezel. And I had this on my iPhone 6S too. That was the only time that I ever got a white iPhone. The display has a black outline around it. And when you have black bezels, it just blends in. But with the white, you can clearly see it, mm-hmm. which I hate. I think it looks disgusting that way, which is why I'm so against white bezels. But I could totally see why they did it because of like the living room and making the tech like friendly and stuff. Mm-hmm. But when I actually had the white iPhone, I genuinely bought a screen protector that was black just to make the bezels like not stand out as much. So I think you're right. I think we could see a company maybe do that.
No, 100%. That's also, I'm pretty sure that's why Apple ended up switching over with the iPhone 8. I believe, or no,
the
10 S. Yeah. 10 S and 10 R. They switched over to black facing screens, which I thought was a really smart move. I don't know. That's the white leaves a little bitter taste in my mouth, but you know what? Something actually hasn't been giving me a bitter taste anymore. Black coffee.
Wow.
Like I don't think it's bitter anymore.
And this is a segue of the year because we're going to go get some and take a break.
I was literally about to say, I am dying. I need some caffeine in me. So let me grab some coffee, guys. We're going to be right back.
We'll talk about pixel leaks and the lossless audio quality, plus some stuff we like this week.
See you guys then.
Pixel leaks have been all over the internet, and I think it's because we all have like just such low expectations for the design of Pixels. We've had a couple really bad years, like with the bathtub notch and some other atrocities. I'm a fan of this leak though. For anyone that hasn't seen it, I'll just describe it really quickly. It's like a light color for the main part, 2/3. Then you have a black bar for the camera, and then on top you have a darker version of the same color. So you would have a dark blue, the black bar, and then a light blue. I actually think it looks really cool. I'm a fan.
I'm like mixed about it. My first question is the top going to be plastic or is it like a soft touch? Like, I feel like that would also probably change my opinion of it because I feel like the feel in hand is a huge part of the phone experience. Like, I don't care what anyone says, like holding your phone in your hand is just a huge difference. Like you need to be able to feel what makes it so nice.
Yeah.
So if it's a plastic top, I'd probably be like, Google, not a good design choice. But with what I am looking at, I do think it does look interesting. It's something that I've never seen from Google before. Or I haven't seen in a while, at least. Looking at like an aluminum looking back and this black bar, as much as it does look Terminator-ish, I really like the colors of it. Mm-hmm. Well, like the rumored colors, Arctic blue, sort of orange, and mostly gray. I always liked Google's naming scheme when it came to colors.
They're like fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And also the one thing that I will say though, is because the top, it almost looks like it's like separate from the phone. It almost feels like the phone could cut off at the black bar, like the camera module. And it almost feels like you could snap that top piece off because it especially in this concept image, it looks like a little not completely flush. But I'm a fan of like the big Google logo. And I also think that Google does it best when they keep it simple and they don't try to like do anything crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. The last few years, Google phones have been plastic. So it would be interesting to see them try metal and kind of like what would happen with that.
I feel like if Google's been going in the direction of more premium devices as is, I think it'd be really cool just to see. And ultimately, even if I do see what you mean when you say it looks like it's further in, like the top part, you just snap it off. I think that's just because the camera module itself is elevated above the back surface. It's leveled, I believe, with the normal back.
Okay.
But the protruding camera like module, because this is literally a module at this point. You know what it actually kind of looks like? Project Aura. Do you remember what that was?
No.
So Motorola and Google years ago announced that they were going to be doing a modular phone. And they literally came out with like concept videos of it, how it was going to look. The camera literally looks like a module taken right out of there. It's just like this piece that looks like it can be just slid into the phone. I mean, I don't think this is going to be a modular phone by any means, but I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was interesting in terms of a design perspective.
Also, the reason why a lot of companies have moved away from aluminum and metal is because it prevents wireless charging.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is going to be a soft touch plastic. Who knows?
Exactly.
We can't really tell clearly from the photo. Google tends to not have the best hardware, but then mix it up a lot with software. But they're also kind of moving in the direction of like less premium phones. Like this year's Pixel 5 was more of a mid-ranger. And I think it's because the flagship market is like really hard to compete in.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see if they also create a flagship. Pixel 6, like the 6 Pro is alleged. So we'll see if that's like more expensive and maybe the build will be different. But I guess time will tell. It's definitely like leak culture is just interesting in and of itself because you don't really know if you could believe anything. And eventually like your expectations are one thing. And then normally at the event, it either is exactly what happened. Like that happened to Google one year where literally everything was revealed before the event, or you're completely wrong. Remember that time last month when we thought there was going to be an Apple event and then there just wasn't?
Yeah.
Sometimes leaks are off. So this could be not at all what it looks like, but if it turns out to look like this, I would actually be pretty happy.
Well, yeah, so that's what they're saying. They're saying that's what everyone's talking about. They're pretty much saying these are not official renders of the device. It's just tipped off from someone. Someone tipped them and had an external artist create these. So we don't actually know exactly what it's going to be like. It seems really interesting. And I think you're right too. Like Google they were getting pretty expensive with the phones, but I know that Google has a very similar mentality to Apple in the sense that you don't need the top specs if you're optimizing the software for yourself anyway.
Yeah.
It kind of works in their favor because they're creating the hardware and the software. They know what hardware is required to make this phone last for at least 2-3 years.
And we'll see if they change the camera finally.
Yeah.
Like if they finally update the hardware as well.
It would be really, really cool to see.
The quality has been pretty good with Pixel cameras in the past, and a lot of it relies on software, but at a certain point you also need hardware changes. And we're seeing in the worst transition ever that Apple is focusing on an update for their music app, which is only going to work on certain devices because there is a hardware component to it. God, that was so bad.
No, all good, all good.
Rolling with it though. Lossless audio quality and spatial audio are coming to Apple Music. With a bit of a caveat, lossless audio quality will not be available on the HomePod Mini, AirPods Max, AirPods Pro, etc., but spatial audio will be available. And Apple's reasoning for it not being available on the AirPods Max, etc., is Bluetooth as one of the reasons, but it won't even be available over Lightning either.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because there is like the hardware component to it where it's just like not possible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what do you think about that? Do you think that people are going to be up in arms, or is it kind of the thing where in the tech bubble, it really seems like people are upset, but then outside of it, like no one cares?
Honestly, I think that in the tech bubble, like people are going to pretty much say that this is trash and like this is so unfair or whatever it may be. But honestly, I fully understand why Apple did it. The reality behind the situation is just this. If you want lossless hi-fi audio, you're not getting it through Bluetooth. I don't care what anyone says. Bluetooth in and of itself has loss. There is quality that is lost in that transfer because it's not end to end. I don't fully understand Bluetooth technology and how it works in the specifics of it, but I do understand that you can and you will lose some of the quality of those files. So it's a little disheartening to see because I would have loved to try it with my AirPods. Or
I mean, you need extra equipment to even try it. You need an external USB DAC. So it's just like, it's not like they're doing this to be petty.
Yeah.
It's like physically, the technology just isn't there. It's really for audiophiles. It's a niche thing. And I kind of feel like Apple needs to do it just to market it because now Spotify is coming out with hi-fi audio as well.
Which is kind of funny too, don't you think? Like Tidal came out years ago and their differentiating factor was hi-fi audio.
I know, they're kind of screwed now.
Yeah, so literally for one, if you're a company, do not make your entire company around one feature because someone's going to copy that feature.
You're screwed, yeah.
You're screwed.
It's like Clubhouse kind of, how like a lot of people have copied that feature.
Exactly. And so one of the things that I'm kind of confused about is the Apple HomePod and HomePod Mini. I do understand that they are connected to your phone, but they're also connected to Wi-Fi. So what would prevent them from accessing Apple Music's streaming platform on their own through the Wi-Fi network and streaming the lossless hi-fi audio? Because if they're such good speakers as Apple claims, why wouldn't they be able to stream it themselves? Because it's Siri backed. Everything runs through there. I feel like there could have been been a little bit more, they could have done with the HomePod and the HomePod Mini, but maybe that's just me.
It's because like the file format that you need to use for Bluetooth just doesn't allow for it. My understanding of it is in order for like the AirPods Max or HomePod to pair to your phone, you need to have it be via the Bluetooth and not the Wi-Fi alone. They have to use the AAC, or they have to use the file format that Apple Music uses for that type of connection.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense then, but it'll be interesting to see spatial audio though. I've been wanting to try that out myself, been fairly intrigued by it. And I definitely want to try it and see how that is, because I know they work with AirPods Pro, so I can give them a shot. But it would have been cool to check out lossless audio through Apple Music, because I feel like Apple, being Apple and having been in the music industry for so long, it'll be just, I'm just thinking it's going to be really, really good quality. I hope it's noticeable.
So there's 2,000 songs to launch, and then they're going to help artists with Dolby Atmos record in a format in which they can kind of take advantage of this feature. And it makes it feel like you're like inside of the music. So I'm stoked for it. Right now, the soundstage already on the AirPods Max is really good. Mm-hmm. In my review, that was one of the main focus points of like, it feels like the drums are to the right of me and the bass is in front of me to the left and the vocals are coming in from both sides. Like you definitely get immersed and you feel like you're like in a room with the music, and this is just going to take it one step further. So I'm excited to try it. 2,000 songs is not a ton when you think about like my monthly playlist is like 100. So eventually like you could run out of music to listen to, but the hope is that they're just going to keep adding stuff.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things that once it's being implemented and once it has been implemented, we could expect a lot more coming soon. Like literally artists are creating music all the time. And I feel like if this becomes a new standard for Spotify and Apple Music, which happen to be probably the only ways to stream music at the moment, like most popular ways at least, like artists are probably going to go find a way or try to start producing music that is in higher quality for those people, because this is probably just going to be the new industry. But, you know, speaking of music, I've been listening to a lot of really interesting stuff lately. I've been trying to really expand my music sense and my music taste. And I want to talk to you guys about it before we run out of time for this episode. So Jacqueline, what do you think about some stuff we like this week?
So down. Let's do it.
First and foremost, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but I'm still watching Suits. I don't know if I said it last week that I was.
Yeah, you did.
I'm still watching Suits. Update, I'm on season 5.
Oh my God.
When I start binging a show, like I said this a couple of months ago, like I just go off. Like I don't stop. It's really bad, but I do really like the show and I'm very happy with it. But in a music sense though, it's such a basic song and I feel like everyone would have heard it. It's called I Did It. DJ Khaled, Post Malone, DaBaby, Megan Thee Stallion, Lil Baby.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like the top of charts right now. Like it's like, I just really liked it and I heard it for the first time like I think a couple of days after it came out and I was like, oh wow. And I didn't realize how much I liked it until I did. And it was a great song. So highly recommend it, guys. Go check it out.
I actually listened to it also, and it's not even necessarily like my taste in music, but I still really, really liked it. Mine for this week is also music related. Olivia Rodrigo was actually on SNL.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was actually really good. She performed her new song, Good For You, which is kind of like this anthemic 2000s pop rock song. And I thought it was really cool. Like it had a nostalgic feel for it, even though it literally came out this year, which I think is like really amazing when an artist can write like that. Highly would recommend that. And by the time this episode is up, her full album will actually be out, I think. Sour. So definitely check that out too. I'm actually like, aside from the stars, this is my second one for this week, and then I'll pass it back to you. The marketing for this album is literally genius. Like she collaborated with Sour Patch Kids because the album's called Sour.
Nice.
So like she's on the boxes of Sour Patch Kids.
Oh, that's sick.
Right? How cool. They created a fake commercial where it's like talking about key things on the album, but it's like in a 1950s style commercial. And then you call a hotline, and if you call the number, you get like a automated message from her plus a sneak peek of like one of the songs, and it's randomized. I feel like album rollouts are like such a lost art, and whoever's like coming up with the rollout for this one is like just killing it.
Absolutely.
What's another one from you?
I'm keeping it pretty music related this week because I started working full time now that I'm off school for the summer. So I've been listening to a lot of music, and J. Cole, a very, very good artist. I used to listen to him a lot when I was younger, and he hasn't come out with music, like good music, in the past couple of years. And he came out with a new album, and he had two songs that really, really hit me. One's called Amari and the other one's called Pride Is the Devil. I really like the songs. They're really, really good. I highly recommend them. J. Cole, his new album, it's called The Off Season. So go check it out. It's actually not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I will definitely check that out. My next one for this week is a podcast called Founders Journal. It's by Alex Lieberman, who's the co-founder of Morning Brew. And it's basically like a podcast that is hosted multiple times a week. And it's just like 10 minutes of him talking about whatever challenge he's facing as a CEO and kind of how he overcomes it. And what's really cool about it is that he obviously, similarly to us, like was just thrown into this right away. Like he never had necessarily like a real job because he started Morning Brew in college.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting to like learn, like I'm obviously expanding NBT, like how to be a good manager, how to be a good collaborator and things like that. And the podcast is like super digestible, like as you would say, snackable content where it's so fast. You could just like listen to 7 minutes and then go on with your day.
It's really cool actually.
Do you want to do one more and then we'll wrap up this week?
Yes. Okay. My last one for this week before I do have to go. And if you don't take any of the suggestions that I gave this week, just take this one. And it's just because it's really close close to my heart. So a buddy of mine came out with a song he's been working on. I've heard this song and I've been listening to this song since I think February. Absolutely going to be a summer track. I highly recommend you guys go listen to it. It's called Needy by Seb, the GM. GM is a general manager. Seb watches these episodes every single week. And so huge shout out to you, buddy. You did really, really good with the song. Go check it out, guys. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, everywhere. It's called Needy.
And with that, we will throw it to the outro. So thank you so much to Adil Constantine for our incredible intro and outro music. Thank you to Luke for the incredible editing of this episode. Thank you to you for listening to this episode. We appreciate all of your support. We'll be back on Monday, 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern with another episode. And if you're interested in just a conversation about tech and you want to continue the conversation, feel free to share this podcast with a friend of yours that's also interested in tech. It really does actually help us out kind of growing this community.
Exactly. Well, we hope you guys did enjoy it. Make sure to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Whenever you guys get a chance, we read every single one of the comments. We really do appreciate all the love, guys. And make sure to check us out on all of our socials. But with that all being said, I think it's time to call this episode done. Thank you guys so much for listening one last time. And I think we'll catch you guys Monday, 8 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Central.
Bye.